Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 59. This week's guest is Cameron Young. Cameron comes to talk with us about his underwater pinhole photography, anamorphic photography, and his alternative processes. Welcome back to the podcast. This is show number, what show is this, Andrew?
59.
Yeah, 59.
I was hoping you'd remember.
I do. I have it written right here. I was just testing you.
Seeing if I was on the ball, eh?
How are you doing today?
How am I doing today? Good. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
So good. Had a week away. I've been in Madrid for the week for work. You understand? Attending an exhibition. No, I didn't take. I was umming and ahhing about what to take with me, and I didn't have a lot of luggage space. And I took my reality camera with me, but actually I also took a little half-frame camera and I shot, I actually got through a roll of 36 or 72 frames. How about that?
I was going to say that's 72, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, but the way I tend to use that camera is to shoot diptychs or triptychs, you know, so you just shoot, pan, shoot, pan, shoot, and then try and line them up.
Right.
As I scan them, cool. So then you get through the roll of film a bit quicker.
I can't handle a 36 exposure roll of 35 millimeter. I don't think I could do it for 72.
No. Well, we're off to Cornwall tomorrow, so I'm taking my reality with me. I'm taking large format camera, but I was going to say that's all I'm taking, but I know you disapprove of me taking too many cameras, but
take what you want.
I am. I actually woke up at 3 a.m. on Saturday morning worrying about what cameras to take with me.
Oh God! What does Julie tell you to bring?
She just looks at the pile of camera bags that have appeared in our garden room, and her eyes roll up to the ceiling. You know,
followed by a big sigh.
Well,
I got you.
Yeah,
cool. All right. Well,
what have you been up to then, apart from work?
Just still shooting a little bit here and there. Working on a roll of infrared when I get a second to do some pictures.
Oh yeah, so I'm taking. Yeah. I'm hoping Cornwall might have some sun, so I'm taking. I've got two rolls of what is it? Oh, the Ilford stuff. You know, the pseudo.
The SFX.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give that a go.
Yeah, cool. I started developing with Rodinal. Well, actually, the first I tried it with the Rolly, I guess it's a Rolly, the R09.
Yeah,
I guess it's the same thing.
Broadly the same, I think. Yeah, it might be slightly different.
I used that up, and then I went ahead and ordered a bottle, a proper size bottle, 500 milliliters of the Rodinal.
When you ordered 500 milliliters, did you have any idea of how big or small that was?
Yeah. Well, I ordered
isn't it? Didn't you order a quart or whatever the hell you
No,
have?
I ordered a really small one from Johnny, which was because I just wanted to test it. I didn't want to have 500 milliliters of it and be like, I don't like this, you know. So
yeah, but you dilute it. It lasts a long time.
Yeah, well, at 1+25 dilution, the bottle that I got was about 20 milliliters a roll, so I got about 6 rolls out of it.
Oh, you got a little baby bottle to play with.
Yeah, just to check it out. Then it was 120 milliliters, and then I ordered the big bottle. So I'm going to try some stand development.
Yeah, I'm not a great fan of stand development, but that's another discussion.
I'm not either. I've never done it. I just wanted to try it, but I think I'm going to do the dilution of 1 to 400.
No, I saw you were mentioning that. I thought, what kind of fool are you? Don't do that. You've got to have some active developer in there. Don't use.
I just
want
to try it.
don't do it on anything that you're desperate.
No,
to keep.
No, of course not. I'm just going to shoot some stuff and mess around.
Honestly,
and let it sit on the counter from 8 in the morning till noon.
if our grandfather was on with us this week, like he was, he'd be telling us off.
Yeah, right.
Before you introduce our wonderful guest, Corey, can I just thank Nick Dvorak for Dvorak? Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that right? Have I got that right? Yes. Anyway, can I just thank Nick for being on the show last week, because we got lots of great feedback. A few people said, "Oh, he put you two in your place, didn't he?" You know, like young whippersnappers, even though I'm well into my 50s. But he did. He was great. He had, I think I was telling you off air that he had one of those voices which I could just listen to all day. And you know, I was going to say send me to sleep, but in the nicest possible way. You know. Anyway.
In the nicest possible way.
Yeah, not while we were talking. Not while we were talking to him, of course.
Yeah, Nick was cool. He just adds to the humongous spectrum of people that we talk to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every age group and just about on every continent now, I think, maybe. I don't know. Except for Antarctica. We're going to be talking to somebody in Australia soon, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of folks we're trying to work up to. And I think the only person who's going to be podcasting at a sensible time is you. I'm going to have to be late in the evening.
Yeah.
They're going to have to be up early in the morning, and you're going to be in the middle.
Yep. Which I can change if something happens.
We can maybe pursue one of our Antipodean guests for when I come back off holiday, because you're going to have to sort yourself out next week.
It's already sorted, mate.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that brings us back to we do have a guest this week.
Yeah.
A few shows ago, when Mr. Holger was here, we talked about some accounts. One of those accounts that I enjoy is Cameron Young, and he does a lot of photography, pinhole photography. One of the things he does that I am keen to talk to him about is doing his underwater pinhole photography. So we would like to welcome you to the show, Cameron. How are you today?
I'm well this morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm intrigued with the underwater pinhole photography that you're doing. I saw where Justin Cornell had experimented with it a little bit, and of course, in true Justin Cornell fashion, he stuck his big toe
in the bathtub
right up to the camera, so you can tell whether he's been clipping his nails properly or not. And a poor rubber ducky filled with sand to stay under the water, you know. But so how long have you been into pinhole photography, Cam?
I'm probably going on 25 years now, I think. I sort of came to it. I was a commercial photographer, worked in a studio where we did everything, you know, still life and fashion and so forth and so on. And at that time, I was really into the large format, you know, zone system, super sharp stuff. And I'd read something about pinhole and I thought, well, you know, this'll never work. And so to prove it, I built a camera, and much to my surprise, it did work. And I remember looking at the negs and just being like, this shouldn't work. And I felt like that the whole time, that every time I develop a roll and I look at it, it's like, this shouldn't work, but it does, you know? And then you go through that whole phase of, you know, you build a ton of cameras and you look at stuff and say, oh, this will work as a camera. And then I started to realize that it had real potential for making some really nice images. And I really never looked back from that. I pretty much exclusively shoot pinhole now and an alternate process.
Nice. Yeah, I can tell looking at your page, your webpage, which is what we're going to be pretty much looking at and referencing throughout the show, which is CameronYoung.com. We'll have a link for it in the show notes. So, but you have anthotypes, solographs.
Yep.
And what else? Andrew, when there's some things you were looking at. There's anamorphic, beneath, cowboy, gothic. You know, I mean, there's just cyanotype impressions. Lots of stuff. So
we're going to need I nearly thought it said bestiality. So that threw my...
Andrew was getting all excited.
Exactly. I know a rugby song about that, but I won't sing it here. We'll have to change the rating of the show to explicit. Yeah. Bestiary.
Those are, and it says that those are tricolor gum bichromate.
Yep.
prints. So I'm out of my comfort zone on that stuff. So. But before we do that, let's talk about on your galleries page. You have the gallery that's called Beneath, and that is your underwater pinhole. So So how did you go? So did you just take a developing tank, put a pinhole in the side of it, put paper in it and put it underwater, fill it up with water, and then make your exposure?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was something I was interested in, but I had really no idea kind of how to do it. And I tinkered with lots of sort of ideas. And I thought, well, you know, you could build a watertight camera and all that kind of stuff. And then one day I was just in the darkroom developing film, and I sort of had it in my hand. And I thought, that's it. That's how we're going to do this. But the problem was that initially I had a Patterson tank, you know, but they have that center spindle to hold the reels that sort of is attached to the light trap at the top. So I figured, well, I can't do that. So I ended up using a stainless steel tank and just bored a hole in the side of it. And then, put a pinhole in there, wrapped the paper on the inside, and then just took it out and basically filled it like you would a developing tank when you're developing, and just sunk it into the water, let it expose for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, I think it was, took it home, developed it, and went, wow, you know, it worked. And my initial kind of idea was that I was going to take a changing bag out and, you know, load the tank, make the exposure, dump out whatever water was in there, and then develop right on site. So I had a little bottle of developer, a little bottle of fixer, and develop it, take it out, you know, and have my image, and then do it again in the change bag. So that was sort of the original plan. But what I discovered is things started to get really, I wasn't getting exposures, and they were grossly overexposed and stuff. And then when I looked, I realized that the developer or the fixer or both was corroding the pinhole. So every time I developed, the pinhole would get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So then I kind of had to abandon the idea of developing on site and would just, you know, do an exposure, take it home, process it, and go from there.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you were just dumping the water out and just keeping the tank
sealed,
light, and just developing right there.
Kind of like a sort of primitive Polaroid kind of thing, you know, instantaneous. But, you know, in all fairness, I mean, none of that images on from that series are much deeper than sort of arm's length. I mean, I didn't dive way down and place things.
Oh, yeah,
I would just find a spot. And then the other thing I had was, you know, even if you have a tank full of water, it does have some sort of buoyancy. So I got a plate weight, you know, that weightlifters use, a little plate weight. And this was about 5 pounds. And then I would, in some cases, if there was a current or something, I would kind of bungee it or attach it to this thing and give it that extra weight to sink it down.
Andrew, that reminds me of your all-in-one developing thing you have coming, right?
Oh, the lab box.
The lab box.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So but maybe essentially, you're just doing it in a tank.
Yeah, I won't convert the lab box. Not after waiting 2.5 years to stick a pinhole in the side of it. But I guess what struck to me, because we've spoken about using a pinhole underwater before. I can't remember who, but I think this is the first guest we've had on who's actually done it, apart from Justin. But I'm not even sure he'd actually messed around with it when he came on the show. But you said, Cameron, that you'd thought initially about using sort of like most underwater photography, they'd put their camera in some kind of waterproof housing. But I guess with a pinhole, that would lead to quite a lot of distortion, because I'm thinking the way the light travels in water, and then you've got this water-air interface, then you've got your pinhole camera. You know, and so the fact that you've got water in the pinhole camera and the interface is continuous with the water outside, then you're probably getting a fairly good likeness.
It
you know, with no distortion.
It was blowing my mind, because technically you're taking a picture of water
through water,
through the same water that you're taking a picture of, you know? Mm.
And if you look at those images, I mean, I didn't clean them up. Whatever you see in there, the bits of crap, that's what's probably floating around in the water, you know, dust and whatever. You know, so that was kind of the neat part of it. The other thing I'm not entirely sure about is that when I was pulling the tank out of the water and looking, you know, getting the shutter back on or putting the tape back over the hole, it always seemed there was a bit of a air bubble around the pinhole. I'm not sure whether or not, you know, whether there was something else happening there that when the water came in and forced the air out, whether what was sort of a little residual air bubble on there. I don't know whether that was during the exposure or just when I took it out of the water.
I know a few of these images almost seem like they're like they've been solarized slightly.
Yeah.
They have that kind of, I don't know, if there was an air bubble there, it seemed like you'd see some kind of I don't know.
Distortion or something. Yeah,
something. But I don't really see anything. Except for in that very last one you have with the rope.
The rope
on the bottom.
That was the very first one that worked, and that was sort of the eureka moment. You know, when I got that one out, I thought, oh man, this is gonna go.
Right. So now I'm thinking about what can I use as a big giant pinhole camera to put underwater. I have a whole army of 5 gallon buckets.
The problem is the fill, right? I mean, you got to have a light trap so that was sort of what I struggled with. You know, like it's
it's going to take eons to fill it up through the pinhole for 5 gallon buckets.
That's right.
So were you filling it in advance or were you filling it in?
Right there. Just take the cap off, submerge your arm into the water and let her fill up, bubble out, and then just put the cap back on. Take off. I was just using some electrical tape as a shutter. Take the shutter off, place it, count to 2 minutes, 3 minutes, or whatever.
So,
I figured.
So you're using the light type, the light tight filler cap on the tank.
Yeah.
I could drill a hole in my SP445 and it would be perfect for that.
Yeah.
Put a pinhole in it.
Do you know what? I think I have enough trouble with normal pinhole photography. I don't think I'll. Plus, if you tried to do this in the North Sea, right?
Oh yeah.
You wouldn't see anything. You'd see.
Yeah.
It would just be muddy and black with the occasional turd floating past.
Not only that, but you'd have to chip all that ice off around it.
That's
No, we don't get the UK is unique. Although we're quite close to some of those really cold countries in Scandinavia, we have that bit of warm water that comes up from the Gulf of Mexico, and it goes around us. That's until global warming and all the ice melts, and then it'll screw that Gulf Stream up, and we'll be trapped in ice. So there.
Sounds like something to really live for, Andrew.
That's if you believe in global warming, of course.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, what you need to do, have you ever thought of using artificial lights? There's your next challenge down there.
Flashes, you know, underneath?
Well, you know, underwater divers, they use strobes and stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
No,
They'd have to be pretty powerful, because how long are these exposures?
2, 3, 4 minutes.
Yeah, you'd have to keep flashing the lights, or do something like those horrible ograms or whatever they're called, the one that Justin does where he sticks a flash inside his mouth, pretty much.
I kind of just like them with the natural light, like the ones of the rocks, and then the rocks are reflected in the water above them, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think you need any flash. I think they look fine.
I'm just trying to give Cameron push him a bit, you know, technically.
he might not want to be pushed, Andrew. No. But I do like that. I definitely like the reflection on top of the water. Seems like.
Which one is that, mate?
Let's see. It's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Number 6.
This is great interactive podcasting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But I think listeners to this show must be used to us by now, because we're always referring to people's images. six. Well, that's the one with a load of rocks. But what? Yeah. I see a load of like lines on it, and I like it. But
like, look up because you can see the reflection of the rocks. You know, in the water, on the surface of the water.
Oh, is that what it is? Is that what I'm looking at? I can see a thumbprint.
Yep.
I get those on mine all the time. I shall start calling mine art.
Yeah, that's what it is. Intentional scarring. That's what you call intentional scarring of the.
Well, there's a lot of folks who this is like one step on from taking your 35 millimeter canister and sticking it in pond water for a month and then exposing it, and you know, people do all that. Yeah, different bodily fluids and
blood
things.
And urine.
That's it.
So have you thought about doing anything else? Maybe going like underneath Niagara Falls or somewhere and trying to take a picture pointing up of all the bubbles? Or
No.
Yeah. I was just intrigued when I saw these cameras. I thought it was really cool because I don't think we've – someone else has done some things underwater, but it wasn't this – no, I mean, it was Amy. What is her last name?
Photo mom. Amy.
She was doing something like this. But she was taking like a big Tupperware container and putting it in the water and then just putting her camera in it. So her camera was dry, you know? So you'd kind of get the over under effect of the water level. That's what it was.
I'd completely forgotten about that.
Yeah, she was doing that too. And unlike hers, where unlike yours, Cameron, where you see the reflection and the water level is above the horizon, you know, hers was like kind of right in the middle, I think, you know, so you can kind of see the river above and then the shallows below. So they're interesting also just as much, you know, I mean, it's.
But you're not in a particularly warm part of the world, are you, Cameron?
Calgary, no, not so much. But, you know, it was mostly through the summertime, so it wasn't too bad.
Yeah. Your arm wasn't totally numb?
Not totally numb, no.
Because I know here in North Carolina, we go up to the mountains and there's a place that you can slide, aptly named Sliding Rock. And that water is freezing. So I can only imagine how cold it is in these streams with these rocks.
You slide off the rock into the water?
Well, it's a little river, really small stream. And there's a natural water slide of like limestone that's been smooth, really, really smooth. There's a little bit of algae stuff growing on it, you know, but it's probably, 75 feet long. And it just has natural bumps in it. And there's a big pool that's probably 10 feet deep at the bottom of it. And you just splash into it. And they've made like a walkway at the side with a handrail. So you can just, there's a line and just slide down and everybody screams, splash, and people lose their sunglasses and their wallets, and they're telling what's in the bottom of that pool. I lost my sunglasses there, actually. So, but we try to get up there quite often. It's fun. But that water is freezing, like 60 degrees, 58 degrees, coming right out of the mountain.
Wow.
But it feels nice in the middle of the summer, so anyways.
Well, that sounds like that's probably mountain water. That would be nice and clear for this sort of photography, wouldn't it? I would have thought a mountain pond... there's probably another term for a mountain pond, but that water is normally, you know, really clear, isn't it? So that'd be great.
Well, the ponds can be kind of silty, you know, but the little creeks and rivers that are in the western part of the state, I mean, they're crystal clear. You know, you can see all the way to the bottom just looking.
There you go. You know? Well, there's your challenge. I've got a couple of stainless steel developing tanks, and I don't want to be making them into pinhole cameras that much, really.
They're
expensive. I need them for developing certain types of pictures. So, right. Cameron, it says on your website, I am a Calgary-based photographer whose artistic practice focus on lensless, well, you're on the right show, photography, and alternative photographic processes. So why and what have you got against cameras with lenses?
Oh, I don't have anything against cameras with lenses. It's just that is just direction I wanted to go, and I don't want to go down the digital analog kind of road there that everybody seems to. But I like the idea of, I guess I call it the hand of the maker, that that what you do is visible in the work that you create, and you know, if you envision and I want to take a photograph of such and thing, and you build the camera to take the photograph, and then you make the emulsion to print the photograph, your hand is involved the whole step of the way. And that's what I like.
Yeah.
If you look at my gallery work, like the anthotypes, for example, if you don't know, an anthotype is basically plant juice, right? So you take, for example, spinach. Spinach works really well. You take spinach, you run through a blender, you get the liquid, you coat a piece of paper, you put the negative, okay, but in this case, it's a positive, so you want a positive, on top, you put it out in the sun bleaches it out, and you have an image, right? So it's very transient. It doesn't last. There's not a whole lot of permanence. I mean, you're going to scan it, and a few years later, it's gone. But it's an interesting idea, right? It's really image making at its basic, right? There's no developer, there's no chemistry. It's just the action of the sun on the plant material. So I like the exploration of that type of thing, you know, to be able to do it through. So if you look at the cyanotypes, pretty easy stuff. You know, you mix the chemistry up yourself. Gum bichromate, same kind of deal. Salt print, same idea. So I like the idea of
salt prints.
Salt prints, yeah. So that's silver nitrate. You take the paper. That's the road that Fox Talbot went down. It's one of the first ones. So it's
Curry knows.
Did you know that Andrew is in the salt prints game?
I did not know.
No. Well, you clearly don't listen to this show. That's who invited you on?
How dare you?
How dare you not know about my salt printing background?
So these anthotypes, the green ones, you say you're using spinach. So are you using another process for the first four or five?
Yeah, so there's, I mean, there's red
pomegranates, I think, by the looks of it.
Beets.
Blueberries.
Oh.
Because blueberries, rose petals work well. Beets. I mean, it all depends. Now, some of these are horrendously long exposures.
Days.
The green ones, which are generally spinach, are, you can probably get an exposure out of them in 3 or 4 hours. Wow. But some of these other ones are like really long days.
I wonder if that's because spinach is a good source of iron, and iron salts and things are kind of reactive, you know.
I wonder.
Now, Corey, I must pick you up. You're acting all surprised about anthotypes, but we have had a guest on who makes anthotypes. And she blew my mind away when she first mentioned it. So I'm really pleased to have Cameron on to enlarge upon it. Tina Rowe, I'm convinced it was Tina who does anthotypes. Pretty certain it was her.
She does.
Yeah, using bits of old plant. So do you? Mm-hmm. So you take your spinach. Okay, so let's take it back to basics. Are you buying a big bag of fresh leaf spinach, or can you use a frozen variety?
Or the cans?
I'm sure you could use a frozen variety. I just basically take it out of my wife's garden.
Okay.
And I have a juicer, and I just run it through the juicer, get the liquid out, and then just paint it on the
paper. And
then
you're painting that onto watercolor paper. What, a fairly heavy 300-gram watercolor paper?
Yeah, something like that. Let it dry, and then I just print digital negatives, but it's a positive, not a negative. It's a positive because it's holding back Yeah, it's a positive. Then just stick it on there.
And, can you not use a negative?
You could use a negative, yeah.
Because these are all photographs of cemetery angels or whatever, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah.
So now, sorry, Graham. Graham Young. That's you're not Graham Young, are you? You're Cameron. you're shooting these portraits of these angels, weeping angels almost. Oh, don't get me started on Doctor Who. You're shooting these pictures of these angels with are you using digital camera or just a
digital camera?
So you could use your iPhone and output the file.
Yeah.
And then you're printing, you're putting that into Photoshop or something.
Yeah.
Are you? Wow. And then printing out a positive onto like an overhead projector acetate sheet or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And then you're sandwiching together in a, you know,
contact printing frame stick her out in the sun and let her go. Yeah.
Now, like salt printing or something else, if you use a hinged back contact frame. Can you just pull it back and see how she's
exactly
changing?
And then it's not going to, you know, there's no processing after the fact. So
yeah, because that's the trouble with cyanotypes and things. When you subsequently wash them, they change, don't they, in terms of image density. Same with salt prints to an extent.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you look, I mean, so this leads to the whole other kind of thing about what happens to the extreme end. So if you look at, for example, the Searidge biofemera, those are lumen prints. And so you know how that works is you take a ordinary piece of black and white photographic paper, stick some, in this case, some plant stuff off, put it out in the sun for a really long time. And then it is obviously outside the realm of what black and white paper was supposed to be exposed at. And then you get these massive color shifts. So if you look at this orange stuff, this is just some old expired, can't remember, Forte paper, I think it was. And then
I have some of that.
Yeah, so just let it out there for a long time, and then you start getting these color shifts. Then it's just simply fixed and scanned.
That's it.
Oh, wow! I have a box of expired Forte paper, and I was going to use it for lith printing. Well, I will use some of it for lith printing, but I might try this as well. This looks fun. This color shift is the same as what you get with solography and stuff, isn't it? Where the paper takes on different colors.
Exactly. Although
this is more vibrant though, because are these straight colors? I'm looking at this.
Yeah,
bright orange.
This is straight colors. This isn't being, I haven't photoshopped anything. No, no.
Because the solograph thing, you have to sort of invert, don't you, in the scan it and invert it.
Yeah, but the Forte paper was the only stuff that this, Ilfer will do it, but it'll be more brown and green. This is really
orange.
Nice. But of course, I've used all my paper and out of luck now.
Yeah.
And then if, you know.
But so the idea behind this, you're very, you know, I like talking about ideas behind pictures because I'm guilty most of the time of going out and snapping away, and I'm sure most people are, because we just like to use cameras and film, and the whole process kind of intrigues us. But you know, clearly there's some thought behind. You're working in series for a deliberate with series of images deliberately, aren't you? There's no accident here.
Yeah. And, you know, each thing leads to the other. So when I was doing the anthotype things, and then I'm interested in kind of what happens in the extreme, sort of the same thing with the lumen prints, like what happens. And so in the cyanotype impressions series that I did, my thinking was, okay, so lots of sun is good. So what about if we did lots of sun and lots of heat? So I built a contact printing frame that was essentially made out of, it was a box that I insulated with building foam, you know, that rigid insulation.
Cyanotype impressions.
Yeah.
So these are, so folks, if you go to Graham's, Graham, I've got to stop calling you Graham.
Graham.
I know. But I keep seeing the word Young. I'm staring at his website, and I know Graham Young from the Homemade Camera Podcast. Free shout out. Check out the Homemade Camera Podcast.
Yeah.
But that's not that's not Cameron Young. That's Graham Young. We're talking to you're Cameron, right?
That's right.
Cameron, these are vibrant, aren't they? Really, really vibrant blues.
Yes. So, you know, I'll just, I guess, recap here. So basically I built a solar oven to expose these things in, and I wanted to see a lot of light, a lot of heat. And so, you know, basically I make the cyanotype paper, then I made it wet, then I put whatever I'm doing, the leaves or plants or whatever, and then put it in the contact printing frame, put it in the solar oven and let it go a day, you know? And so it basically just bakes it, and so you get these color shifts, and you know, the browns and greens, and sometimes the plant materials get baked right on the paper, and then just a quick rinse and you're done.
So hang on, so just explain that to me again. So you're making you're coating your paper, but while it's still wet with the
I let it dry, and then I spray it down with a spritzer bottle or a spray bottle, and I put the plants so the emulsion's wet.
Yep.
The plant material's wet, and then I put it in the contact frame, then into the solar oven, and then bake it till it's done.
So the solar oven is a contained box with the insulation in with a UV light source on top?
No, just outside, just out in the sun, summer sun.
Solar, Andrew, oh, solar. Okay.
Well, you know, yeah, sounds okay. Like I'm some just, kind of in the UK, Evil, we don't get sun here.
Sounds like some kind of Dr. Evil know. Master plan, a solar oven.
Maybe it would be really great, Cameron, if you could, see, I got it right. Cameron, if you could take some photographs of that device and yes. post it to our, to the Lensless Podcast Facebook group page. Yep.
You bet.
Yeah.
So are you intrigued by the idea of the transient nature of things and capturing them in a way? I mean, it's those anthrotypes, you know, you're using plant material, which is kind of decaying. The image is impermanent. You know, it's yep. a fleeting moment, or am I just reading too much arty-farty stuff into this?
No, I think you're right. And if you look at a lot of the stuff that I've done, I mean, that idea, which goes, you know, to the right to the statuary, the graveyard statuary, that sort of stuff, the idea of transience and that. Yeah, for sure.
Guardians of the Eternal Sleep. Exactly. They're your weeping angel pictures, aren't they?
Exactly.
Are they straight cyanotypes?
Yeah.
You haven't played with cyanotypes, have you, Corey, yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't messed with much cyanotypes. I think I am. I'm going to catch some slack for this, but I think I'm going to give looking to trying some salt printing and see about it. Yeah, why not? You know,
be proud.
Yeah, let's check it out. See
Neil Piper of the Sutton Whitewash was telling me. I forget we were communicating by something or other, one of these social media platforms. I lose track. And he said he's been
signals.
Yeah, smoke signals. He's been putting together a show for his university studies, and I think it's due to open fairly soon in Suffolk. I've seen pictures of it. We might have even missed it. I don't know where it's coming up. And he was talking to one of the lab technicians, and he was sharing some of his. Neil was sharing some of his. Pinhole pictures, and the lab technician said, you should, these would look great as salt prints. And then he had to explain that he'd given me so much SHIT over this salt print process that he daren't do it. So now Corey is coming out as a salt print wannabe.
Fantastic. No, I'm not. I'm not. I haven't done it yet, so I'm not claiming to be a wannabe yet. I want to try something. I want to try either. Just, you know, the cyanotypes or, you know, just doing something different.
But
know,
what about a bit of Van Dyke brown or something like that? That'd be good.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe.
Calotype.
Yeah. Calotypes, yeah, they've all got that same sort of...
I think I'm going to make some solography cameras and give it a try. I've never tried it, you know, so why not just put one into my house and see what happens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got one that I picked one up from the solar can man at the photography show, so mine's stuck on the drainpipe outside the house. It's been there since March.
Listen, so you're a hipster because you didn't make yours. You bought a solar can. You received a solar can. You didn't even make yours, Andrew? Come on.
Nick would be even more scathing of me knowing that I actually even bought my own solar can instead of making one. What's wrong with me? I should make more things, really.
I think I'm going to get into. I'm going to make an anamorphic camera.
Yeah, I've got one. I'm just going to play around with it a bit more. I want to make mine out of metal though, because that cardboard material. I painted it black, but then I kind of taped a bit of. Mm-hmm. Every time I tape a bit of paper, and I'm pulling the black stuff off again, you know. So. Yeah. We're talking so anamorphic. We'll come back. I'd like to come back in a minute and talk about some of these other. Series you've got, but anamorphic. Yeah. Me and Corey have a fascination, a kind of frightening, scared fascination with anamorphic. And
Andrew wakes up in the middle of the night and cold sweats.
I do. Yeah, I do. That's true. So, share with us all your secrets, Cameron, please.
Well, I guess the biggest thing is to find the proper can. I mean, that's the proper thing. As you say, as you just mentioned, I mean, a cardboard one is not durable enough.
No.
So I found some cans at a craft store that were, I don't know, made for packaging up wedding cakes or something. And then they were just the ideal size for half a sheet of 8x10 photo paper. So they are sort of 4 inches tall and whatever that is around. nice metal lid on the top. So I just bored a hole through the top and put the pinhole in there. And I calculated the size of the pinhole based on half the distance to the bottom. So rather than calculating the true kind of focal length to 4 inches, I sort of calculated it to halfway, which gave me an f-stop of like 190 or something like that. And then you just fill it full of photo paper and kind of put the lid on and point it in the general.
Is your photo paper meeting and touching, or is there a little gap?
A little gap of probably, you know, like half an inch or something.
Mm-hmm. And do you have to tape that in to make it sit still?
It'll friction fit in there beautifully. Mm-hmm. I've also done it with 4x5 inch film, and I actually had to use a little lip in there to keep, you know, I used some. So it's just a can that takes a half a sheet of 8x10 paper. So it's about 4 inches deep. And then whatever this, you know, the wrap on that is, it friction fits in there. The paper doesn't touch. So there's a bit of a gap, quarter inch gap in the size cans I've got. And just a pinhole in the top. Now, one of the things that you'll realize pretty quick is when you have a can like that, it's really awkward to place, right? I mean, you've got a limited thing. It's a can, it's going to roll around and stuff. So I built a tripod adapter, and I don't know if you know what these are called. They're called gear clamps. They're a round band that you use to attach pipes together.
Uh-huh. I know what you're talking about.
Okay. And so basically I just got one the size of the can, and I bored a hole through the clamp and mounted it onto a little piece of wood that I put a threaded insert into. And so then I can mount it on a tripod. So I put the can in this thing, tighten it up, and then I've got the screwed on a tripod, which gives you way more flexibility in terms of placement. Because if you've got a can, you can either point it straight up, or if you got to wedge it so it doesn't roll. And I found by having a mount for it, I had a lot more flexibility in terms of how I could
place it. That's the second photograph we need you to post into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
If you go on your website under the anamorphic photos section,
yes,
the second pinhole picture is of a school with the school steps and the entrance into the school.
Yes, that's correct.
Did you have your camera sitting just straight up like in the normal orientation, like you would set a can, or was it laying down pointed at the door?
I'm sorry, that's the second one, school mm-hmm. steps?
Balmoral School. Yeah, because you've got the steps. That's just crazy, man, isn't it?
I had it placed on a little wee tripod, a little bit back from the steps.
But the pinhole was on top of your camera, and that was pointed straight up
or angled.
Pointed sort of straight at the pointed straight at the school door.
I got you. Okay. So was that like a 45 degree or something?
Yeah.
It wasn't 90 standing straight up. I got you. Okay. That makes sense. All right.
Yeah, because you've got the stairs, which would be joined together, but they're on the periphery of the image.
Yeah, because it doesn't capture what's directly in front of the camera. It's kind of weird.
These anamorphics really remind me of, you know, like M.C. Escher. Prints where everything just kind of goes together, and the steps just kind of, you know, everything just like just craziness.
Yeah,
particularly the one of some commercial building. I think it's got the number 140 on it or something, and something I don't know.
Oh yeah,
image 10.
Yeah, it's just totally twisted.
Yeah, like something from the Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Well, there's that film is it Inception, where all the buildings kind of fold up on themselves? Do you know
it? Yeah, because it's like the dream or whatever.
Yeah.
They're in their minds. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah, totally. That reminds me of that too, completely.
Any other film references we can think of?
The Matrix number 2? I don't know. But this is I'm up to building an anamorphic camera.
Yeah, well, that was.
And me and Neil are going to do salt prints together.
There you go.
Neil, you send me your results, and I'll post them as mine so that you don't have to deal with.
That'll probably be better than mine.
Andrew's
anyway.
Constant badgering.
I barely mention it now. I haven't shared many pictures. I've shared a few on Flickr. It's the lith prints I'm working on more this year than salt prints. The year of the this is the return of the lith for me.
Return of the lith. That's what
it is. Yeah. So that's great. So we're all inspired. All our listeners now are inspired. Listeners, go out and make yourself an anamorphic pinhole camera because it's easy. So you take your paint can or your can, stick a pinhole in the top, and measure the distance from there to halfway down, and that's your effective focal length. It's based your exposures on. Mm-hmm. Are you making fancy panty pinholes or doing a bit of poking and sanding or drilling, or are you a driller or a poker? Do you just go and buy one from someone?
For years I used to make my own, and I was the poker sander kind of guy, and then I'd put the pinhole into the enlarger and blow it up and check for, you know, do all that nonsense. And I did a lot of those, and then
all that nonsense. Did you say, "Oh, you'll be up, you'll be"? That's half the listeners alienated.
all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, when I started using some of the commercial cameras, like the zero image stuff and the Ondu, I realized there was a quality of a pinhole, and I started buying them from the Reality So Subtle guy, and his pinhole sets are just amazing. And so for a lot of the homemade cameras, I've just replaced my pinholes with his and getting way better results.
I sent him a message the other day seeing how he's doing. Maybe we can get him to
fairly soon after he'd been on. He was asking about coming on. He must have had another camera or something to push. But no, there's what an interesting guy, and let's get him back on. Has he done anamorphic? I can't remember. Michael Weitzman was Mr. Anamorphic for me with his
the
wonky train tracks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you been tempted by those Cesare Barczak?
Cesare Barczak, that's the guy's name, camera that I was thinking about earlier.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was. When we were interviewed, Curry dodged that particular bullet because Cesare is lovely, but we had multiple connection problems with Cesare, and his English is a bit patchy. So,
where was he at, Andrew?
He's in Warsaw, I think, Poland.
Okay.
Poland, that's where it was.
Yeah. Yep. So he's Mr. Vermeer cameras.
Cesare. Okay. Yeah,
and
okay.
If you go on. If you type in Vermeer cameras, and he makes 6x17, but 6x12, I think, is more of a workable size. Because, and they're works of art, his cameras. For what they are, they're not too badly priced. I forget exactly how much they are, but for what they are, you know, they're not too badly priced. But, you know, you can take your tin can and get a James Guerin pinhole.
Yeah,
and away you go. So please, enjoy your yourself. Picture of your clamp is and the picture of your solar oven.
You bet. Now guys were talking about. Have you guys ever seen that stuff by pinhole printed? Have you seen that guy's cameras?
Yes, you have to remind me though. Certainly,
he does the 3D printed cameras, and he has a 6x6, and he also has a 6x17 clipper.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
And I don't
know his name, but I'm familiar with it.
I can't remember his name either. I don't have any of his cameras.
I had his 6x17 printed, and it's a nice workable camera. It's a little tricky to load, but it works well.
As are all 6x17s.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to have three hands basically to do
pretty that, much.
Well, I have James's 6x12 I have, which is another one of those where you need like little baby fingers or tweezers to get the film threaded around the.
That's what I use. I used a pair of the tweezers out of my first aid kit, those big plastic ones, you know?
Yeah.
I just put a pair of those in my bag whenever
I must have slim artistic fingers, whereas you've obviously got big, fat, meaty workman's fingers.
You have womanly small fingers?
I do. Petite fingers. I've got the hands of a midwife. And so I can I can just about manage without surgical implements to get my film through.
Not me. It's like trying to shove cucumbers in there to
megapixels. How many megapixels do you get in your pinhole camera?
What size are your megapixels?
We were chatting with Ethan Moses just a couple of days ago. He's our next guest on the large format photography podcast.
Quit it, God.
Simon gets grief off Johnny Sisson for dropping in his alternative, his other podcast. Okay, Cameron, Cowboy Gothic. I love this idea of, this is not a new idea to me. I've seen not quite this take on it with cowboys, but I've seen the idea. I think Rachel Brewster Wright, she does some things with printed text and maps and combining old documents with cyanotype processes.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I had sort of this idea, and I'd seen these old kind of Pulp Fiction paperbacks in the used bookstore. I thought, you know, this would be great. And then I got these little kind of plastic cowboy guys and painted them up and then photographed them and then sort of found an appropriate kind of title of a book, you know, the day it rained bullets.
This is great. The kid from Lincoln County staged to Durango.
Exactly. So I tried to find something, photographed them, then simply made the negs and then printed it right on the pages just for fun. And then they're actually, I don't think I show it here. I bound them in a Japanese style accordion book. So they're actually kind of bound together and redone.
Cool. So I like the nemesis of Circle A.
Yeah, that's right.
So how you, yeah. Okay. So I'm a bit lost here now. So your receiver, where it would be watercolor paper, is actually your page from your, novel and And how are you getting the image onto that? And are you coating the whole page? The whole page? Then it can't be coating the whole page because it'll all turn blue, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, coating the whole page, and then the way that it's done is that they're kind of a mask around them, black, so that the external edges are not getting exposed.
Okay.
Mm. Wow, that's intricate masks.
Yeah.
And what was your thought process to lead you to doing this little mini series?
I don't know.
You just kind of stumbled upon these little guys.
It just arrived. Yeah.
I wish I had ideas like that.
It just popped in your head.
In my head. At the time, I was doing a lot of bookbinding and bookwork, and it kind of came as a natural extension of that. How could I repurpose existing text and how could I put an image on them that's somehow related to the text? And then in the bookstore, seeing the Pulp Fiction novels, and then the light bulb went off and then from there.
Yeah, cool. So you obviously work on a lot of different projects, but from a day-to-day aspect, do you, you know, do like myself and Andrew and a lot of our listeners do, where they just carry a camera and just kind of do snapshotty, pinhole-y, you know, just whatever. I mean,
I tend to work with a long-term series in mind. Like, right. I don't often, I mean, I take certainly snapshots and random pictures, but generally I'm building towards a larger body of work. I tend to work that way. And a lot of stuff, for example, that I've been posting on Instagram lately has been sort of the stream and water pictures, mm-hmm. you know, and that's becoming part of a much larger series, which I'm sort of the working title Quiet Light, where I'm looking at specifically urban park settings and how that tranquility might be an oasis from the urban environment, sort of that thing. So this will probably go maybe a year before I put it all together in some form.
So are you putting things on? I mean, I'm looking at these pictures now. I saw them earlier and I thought, well, actually, you're clearly using Instagram in a different way to your website. Is this kind of almost, are we seeing kind of work in progress here?
Yeah. I think there's an accountability thing. I think for a lot of us, we take a whole lot of stuff and then it sits in the negative sleeves or on the computer. And I think for me, the Instagram thing was more of an accountability. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to try to put something up every day, every couple of days. And I think the other part for me is I start to see things develop. You know, like I see series start to develop. I start posting at Instagram. Then I look back at my feed and go, wow, I see something happening here. I see a direction going. You know,
that's a really clever use of Instagram. I like it.
You know, another series that I'm sort of in the infancy is, I don't, you know, may not get these in Britain and the southern states, but we in my neck of the woods, we have these glacial erratics, which are these great big rocks that have been dropped out of great glaciers. And so you'd be driving across the prairies and all of a sudden there'd be this huge stone the size of a house. Yeah. And that's sort of where they came from. And there's a lot of them. And they're kind of a weird aspect of the landscape. So I'm working on it once again, another long-term series called Monoliths, where I'm going to sort of travel around and photograph these things. And probably the final series probably will be salt prints.
Yay.
Yeah. So that's kind of like I've been reading about the Japanese will take those big giant rocks like that and they turn them into Shinto
shrines and stuff.
Yeah, and they tie those big ropes around them, you know, because they're important things, big rocks and trees and stuff. I'm really interested in all that right now, reading about that stuff.
Can we talk a little bit about scenes from the landscape of loneliness?
You bet.
Because that's both an interesting subject matter and
are those
they're the bum cry gum. Bichromates.
Gum bichromates, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you do those with pinhole? Are these images or just...
Yeah, they are and they're not. So what I did is I had a pinhole sieve made for me. And a pinhole sieve is somewhat like a zone plate, except instead of being the rings, they're holes. And it looks just like a sieve or a colander.
Yeah.
And so they're specific to... Unlike pinhole, they're specific to a focal length, right? You have to, and so I had some
zone plates are as well, aren't they? I think.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
They are, yeah.
So I had a an old Netter folding camera, and that I was a 75. I think it was a 75 millimeter focal length.
Yeah, it is.
So I had this thing made for that, and I took out the lens, but I didn't take out the shutter. And so the thing was that. A sieve is quite fast. I think this was F64. So it was really quite fast. And
yeah,
so what
I say, there's a lot of light coming in there, huh?
Yeah. So what I did is I used, at the time it was that Ilford 1600 film, you know, the high speed stuff. And so this, I could handhold this at about a 25th of a second using the existing shutter in the Netter. So I could just handhold this, use the viewfinder and stuff. So then I just went out and it gives kind of a zone platey kind of look, but not. Mm-hmm. It's very diffused, and there's obviously a lot of refraction and stuff that happens. So then from here it was sort of a logical. Well, from in my mind at the time I was doing gum bichromate, so it was sort of a logical step to go that way.
The idea, I think, this is one of the beauties of photography, not necessarily just pinhole, but I think this using photography to capture. This idea of either loss or loneliness or alienation.
Exactly.
You know, I often find myself when I look back at my pictures, I've got lots of empty chairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're very kind of evocative in much the same way. And you've just got these, and the use of this pinhole sieve, and I'll ask you more about that in a minute, is just, you know, these lone, solitary figures. Some of them, there's one looking down in sort of Rodchenko style. And you know, they're very... You know, you can't obviously identify who they are, but there is this sense of alienation.
I like all of these, but I really like the ones that really catch my eye and I keep clicking back to are the ones where the person's figure and their shadow are all silhouetted and there's no detail in them.
Yeah.
You know, like you have the one with the lady walking with like a jacket on, you know, and you can kind of... Once you can start picking out details like that about it, you kind of start creating your own stories in your mind that changes from not being any identifiable marks.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
you know. But they're all, I really like they're awesome.
Cameron, who does one go to get hold of a pinhole sieve?
Well, you know, this goes back quite a few years, and I just was I just Googled pinhole sieve, and there's a guy in Toronto who is making them, but you know, I've since gone back to try to get another one made, and his website's down or linked or whatever, so I don't know.
I mean, looking at this thing, is it something that's possible to...
That's very convenient, Cameron, because now you're like, nobody...
Yeah, it's the only one. I'm not telling these whippersnappers where they can get pinhole sieves from.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've made my own zone plates before, you know, that whole thing where you blow it up and they photograph it using tech pan film and do all that kind of stuff.
Sounds
so
like...
I've gone that route and, you know, I've got results. But I'm assuming it's the same idea that you would just calculate a...
Are they holes in concentric rings?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yeah. And they seem to be, if I remember rightly, I think they're kind of sized. So the inner rings, the holes are smaller and they get bigger as you go out. I can't remember.
I wonder what would happen if you took that design and put rings inside of the holes.
Now you're just talking crazy.
You know what I mean?
What's wrong with you? So tell us all about gum bichromate then. Because we've had folks on before, but not with alternative process, but no one, I don't think, who's done gum bichromate work.
Well, so the way it works is that you take... gum arabic is the medium, all right? And so the theory here is that if you take gum and mix it with a dichromate, either potassium dichromate or ammonium dichromate, and you expose it to light, the gum hardens in proportion to the amount of exposure it receives, okay? So if it gets a lot of exposure, like in a highlight area, it gets a lot of... So forth and so on. So what you do is you mix the gum with watercolor pigment, and then you coat the paper on there. Sorry, you coat it on the paper. Then you expose it, and then you just do water development. So you put it face down in water for about an hour, and it just the places that don't get a lot of exposure, like the highlight areas, the gum sort of dissolves off. The places that get a lot of exposure, like your blacks, they get, it's really hard, so it doesn't dissolve off. Then you just rinse it off, let it dry, and then you print in layers. So you won't get, it's not a one exposure kind of deal. You kind of build it up over 3, 4, 5, 6 exposures.
With different colors sometimes?
You can if you want. Like the ones, the Landscape of Loneliness, were all sort of in a black burnt sienna thing. With the Bestiary series, which is tricolor, you make your color separations from the neg, RGB, and then you print each layer. So you print a red layer, you print a blue layer, and you print a yellow layer to get your color balance there. And that's it. It's the hardest printing I've ever done. It takes forever to print something. Like a one print may take you 4 or 5 days of work to get it. And it's tough going.
Yeah, because I was thinking the scenes from the Landscape of Loneliness, they seem like they're, I don't know, not sepia tone, but they have kind of look to them.
Yeah.
I prefer those single toned ones, mainly because it sounds easier to do.
Yeah.
Mainly because he's lazy.
Yeah. You know, but if on the website, like in our image one, are tricolor gums of the puppet heads I was working with at the time, and the Bestiary series, which is sort of part of the same sort of in our image concept, they're tricolor gums, but I have to confess, they're tough going.
Do some people combine gum bichromate with other processes and call gum over something,
gum overs,
platinum or something?
Gum overs, cyanotype, gums over platinum, stuff like that.
So there's a whole world of stuff to explore, isn't there?
This is
madness.
It is.
So your gallery of vessels, cyanotype impressions, Bosnia, Hand of Man, they're Guardians all of Eternal Sleep. Those are
straight on cyanotypes.
Straight. Yeah, okay. Right.
And they are lovely. Wow. Cyan. Are they pinhole images or Holger or something? Because they look.
Some are. Some aren't. I can't remember. So, Holga ones, Hand of Man or Holga ones. Some of them are iPhone ones. Guardians of Eternal Sleep are straight on digital.
So see this. I like this because. I don't like the conversation of, oh, should you be doing digital? Should you be doing this? Who cares about what you do?
Exactly.
Well, we can't even tell anyway, so it's not an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, this is such a hands-on process. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you could make a digital interneg from a picture. I mean, who cares? It's the final image, isn't it?
At the end of the day, that is whatever they've
especially
got.
Especially for this.
Why are we even at the point of having to question whether what you did to create the image, you know, I mean, like it should, you know, I like being able to do this and look at this kind of work and even the stuff that James is doing, he's doing the sanitized, but he's using digital negatives that he's printing out on a, you know what I mean? So
I'm curious cause I want to be able to copy it. Yeah. This one, the Bosnia one with the stairs, the very ornate, got it enlarged on my screen now to about 12 inches by 12 inches image I'm looking at now. And this, the one in Bosnia, image number 9, Curry. So you've got this iron staircase and you've just got this sweet spot in the middle. It's so reminiscent of sort of Holger work or even Lens Baby type things, you know, where you've got that that sweet spot in the middle. It's just brilliant. I love it. In fact, I've got a Lens Baby, which people take the mickey out of me for using sometimes, but
you are,
I think it would be great. I think it would be, I am a Lens Baby. It would be great. I think that I might use it for, you know, for this sort of alternative work. Maybe I'll use it for some of my salt prints. How about that?
Yeah. There you go.
But this is lovely. I love it. I love this picture. I'm staring at it now and I don't know what it is
really
about
enjoy
it.
Enjoy the fact that you're using everything. You're using digital.
Yeah.
There's none of this. Oh, well, I only shoot this. Or I only shoot this. You know, it's you're running the whole gamut on this on your website from using digital to shooting pinhole underwater. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of it can all mesh. It all doesn't matter anymore. You know,
it doesn't. At the end of the day, you know, when it's you're handing someone something to look at or it's hanging on the gallery wall, I don't think there's a lot of people go, well, how, you know. Did he use digital? What did he use? I mean, at the end of the day, it's the impact of the image. And I don't have any sort of purist things. Whatever goes into my workflow to get the job done, whether it's, you know, digital capture and, you know, analog print or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just whatever's going to get the job done for me, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like that side of it, of everybody just doing whatever they want to do, and then at the end of the day you just look at what they're doing and then make your own opinions, you know.
And I guess part of it really, I like working with my hands, you know, and I don't, not mean any disrespect here, but it doesn't take an awful lot to push print on your printer, you know, but there's a little more skill to, you know, to shrink your paper and size your paper and coat your paper, and at the end of the day for me there's a whole satisfaction from that aspect of it as well, right. You know.
And with these, with your solographs that you've done, these they all look like they're just, are they all in your backyard?
Some of them are in my backyard. I mean, the problem with solographs is that you get a tremendous amount of cameras stolen. I mean, you know.
Right.
And so, yeah, some of them are in my backyard. Some of them are areas that I found sheltered and stuff. But, yeah, that's it.
But so you don't. So you can just go in your backyard, you know. I see pictures on Instagram of people making these armies of solograph cameras and taking them everywhere and taping them up all over the place. You know what I mean? And it's like, you can still have fun in your backyard.
You bet.
Know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you don't have
exactly.
To. Well, what was Andrew?
Mm-hmm.
What was her name? I forgot her name. Diane, who was like leaving her house with paper. And not even bringing the camera with her and like making a camera wherever she found the can.
Sure.
She was saying that she was never more than 5 minutes away from her house. You know what I mean? Like all the stuff she does is literally, you know,
yep.
in her own yard. So yeah, that's great. You have a lot of great work, Cameron.
Well, thank you.
It's very inspiring.
It is.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm anamorphically fired up again. Yeah.
So you've done your job.
There we go.
Well, I think one of the things that we have managed to do, judging by some of the feedback we've had over the last year or so, is just some of the great guests we've had on is just offer a level of inspiration. And I think Corey and I feel inspired pretty much every week after we've spoken to people. Yeah. And, you know, we've had emails and comments on the Facebook group saying, well, you know, I've been sort of in doldrums and we've been listening to the podcast and just people just get inspired. And if we can bring a little bit of inspiration to folks out there, then we're doing our job, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
And even if, I know Andrew was booing this idea I had recently, but even if you can't make, you know, cyanotypes and homemade cameras and you're still shooting, you know, one regular roll film and scanning it and printing it out digitally, you know, I mean, at least you're still creating something.
Exactly. Doing something, I didn't. You know? I mean, when have I said anything about against that?
Yeah.
I said that for me. I just said for me. No, let's get this one thing straight. Mrs.
Well, you said, no, you're not. And I was like, I can't, you know, I have a darkroom anymore. I'm just going to try and print it. So, no, you're not. No.
This year I'm trying to concentrate on printmaking of all sorts. And I'm still scanning stuff. I've posted a couple of pictures from my Berlin trip last year. And it's quite interesting what you were saying, Cameron, about looking back through your Instagram thread. So I've just posted those to Instagram. One is from a mortuary table in a German concentration camp, and I've got some others, and they're clearly all part of the same. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to this concentration camp, and you can't help but visit these places and feel a sense of loss and despair, and that's what I've called it. And as I look back, you know, then I'm not posting them all together, but I can clearly see a link as I'm posting these. These pictures, and I should make proper prints. At the moment, they're just negative scans, and I think that's the way I use. I mean, I do put some print scans on there, but largely, I'm using it as a sort of visual sketchbook, really, and thinking, well, to come back and make a series of prints, because prints for me is what it's all about, you know.
Yeah.
I think in this other gallery you have that's called In Our Image One.
Yeah.
The number four, that looks just like Andrew. Andrew, I think I might see if I can borrow this image, Cameron.
He hasn't got a beard.
But he's got that far off distant stare with both eyes going in the opposite direction. Kind of lost.
Oh, dear.
Spit image, Andrew. That's a long lost brother. Well, so before I forget, I wanted to say thank you to recent guests. Well, not recent. She's a guest a while ago, but Gretchen Hayhurst and Adam Grazer, who donated to the Ko-fi account. Thank you.
Thank you. It's really appreciated. Yep. How are you coming on? It's all going into the sticker and pen fund, isn't it?
Yep, and beer huggy fund and keychain fund. Yep. I've been talking with Graham and... Chicken Thumbs. I forgot Graham's name.
Yeah, I've forgotten his name as well. Too many Grahams.
Yeah, he's been sending me a bunch of designs he's been doing, and I've been kind of, I like this one. Let's do that, you know. So it won't be much longer, and then we're going to be getting some stuff coming out. So it's happening. Slowly but surely, but it's happening. Yeah. I sacrificed... a lot of my X-ray film and one of my Holgas for I traded them for some artwork, you know.
So, that was before we had Ko-fi donations.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure. But thanks to everyone who has chipped in. Everything is greatly appreciated. It's amazing. Thank you. Yeah.
It is.
Andrew, you need to thank the listeners.
I did thank the listeners. Thank you. Thank you, listeners, for buying coffee for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because clearly, by the quality of the way we produce this thing, it doesn't cost us anything to produce the show, but it does enable us to do additional things, like giveaways and things, you know.
And I've been talking with Daniel.
Daniel
Novak.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, you have? I've just seen that
conversation. Yeah, we're going to start doing, try to start doing a annual, I guess, once or twice, two times a year, maybe three times a year, a little pinhole publication.
A zine? Is that?
Yeah.
Can we call it a zine?
Well, I don't know. I think it's going to be a step above that, maybe.
Is
a little bit better printing. What he sent me an example of what he did, and he was willing to help. So
there's also that Lulu. Was it Lulu.com that Nick was talking about last week?
So get your favorite pinhole images.
Mr. Dan Novak seemed quite keen to. He seemed very enthusiastic, and I love that. If someone's enthusiastic, I'm happy for him to get on with it. Quite frankly,
yeah. So we'll be doing a maybe an open call for some pinhole photography work coming up soon. So start.
Are we thinking just? Yeah. I know this is. We're sort of winging this as we go, but are we thinking just images or images and words?
I think maybe just images for this first one. I think it was working out to be if we did like 25 images, 25 artists gave us two pictures each, you know, that would be 52 pages. So he was saying it was going to be two pictures each for 25 people. So I don't know, maybe it might just be one. But that's something I've wanted to do since the very beginning of the show was put out some kind of, you know, pinhole work because I don't know. I mean, there's a few that's happening, but I don't know.
So the more coffee donations you have, the more pictures you have in it? Is that the way it works?
Well, no, not really. Well, Daniel broke it down pretty much kind of like, you know, hey, if you get this many copies, it's only going to be this many dollars, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it actually was...
Did Dan send you something? Because I saw in a message that I just only saw.
He did. He printed out a little an example. You know, one of his layouts that he had, and I thought it was really nice. You know, I mean, and if what he's talking about being able to do as close to that and the quality of that, then awesome. You know, it'd be good. Especially because remember the podcast book that came. I mean, not the podcast book. The pinhole book that came out a few years ago,
FD.
I like that, so I'd like to kind of be able to do something along those lines. That's much more frequent, you know.
Yes, what a great idea!
Yeah, so it's coming, so there's some stuff coming, it's gonna be fun. Yeah,
good, well done.
So, yeah, all right, well, Cameron, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you've been an awesome guest with
you
lots
have.
Of stuff
Thank
to
you.
Talk about. Yeah, and if you'd like to check out. The coffee account. We're at coffee.com/thelensless podcast.
Okay.
Andrew, where can we catch you at?
Well, I'll be in Cornwall from tomorrow. If anyone is down in Truro.
Caravanning around?
No, we haven't quite got the caravan yet.
Oh,
we're
right.
still
You're
with,
sort
we're
of
still
camping.
With a folding camper. Caravan is coming, but not yet.
Right.
But I'm hoping to meet up with a photography buddy down in Cornwall. But no, you can find me at Warboys Snapper in most places. And for pinholes, Warboys Snapper _pinholes on Instagram and on the Twitter and at the Lensless on the Twitter. And then keeping order within the Lensless Podcast Facebook group.
Yeah. Thank God someone is.
Mm.
And Cameron, where can everybody go to check out?
CameronYoung.com is where I generally hang out.
Yeah. And you're on Instagram.
I am.
Yeah.
CYYC, I think, is my handle there.
CYYC.
Yeah. Yep.
So go take a look at that. And you can track me at all the places Andrew mentioned.
No, you can't.
Twitter.
You're not on Warboys Snapper. You're not on Twitter.
On Instagram, at Pinhole Cannon, that's pretty much where I hang out at. So, yeah. All right. Well.
And Cameron, don't let him steal any of your images to All try right. and poke fun at me, okay?
Please. Okay.
We will.
So right. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Sounds like a bird.
everybody have a great week, and I will be talking to you all next weekend.
Thank you.
Without smelling Andrew. I mean, without Andrew being there. Thanks, Cameron.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Do suffer from occasional guest dropout. That sounds like some medical condition, doesn't it?
It does.
You can get a cream for it, apparently. There are ways around it, but Corey's too lazy to do it.
Totally, completely.